Accession number 8171. Reel 4.
Mr. Metalman, reel 4.
One had a kind of fear, but it is difficult to explain, not so much fear for one's personal life, of course one had that too, but knowing one was there now with an army, and that army could well be smashed. That somehow was at the back of our mind. An additional thing, politically, I realized it after a short time when I was in Russia, that we were rather open to attack. We could not argue deeply about anything. I remember one case, and I'm going forward a little bit now. I was in a house in the next winter with a Russian teacher. She was 24 years old in a little village, and I got rather friendly with her, just friendly because we were in the same house. And she once said to me, now, why have you come to Russia? You come here, you burn, you destroy, you slaughter, and you told me you come from a poor working class background. What do you think you personally get out of it? And now, don't use slogans, tell me in your own words. She challenged me. I liked her, and I started kind of off about the German glory and things, and she said, no, stop it, no Nazi ideology, no Nazi words, your own words, why have you come, what do you think it is all about, what are you doing here? Because in my view, you are being fooled by your rulers. And I remember I got angry because I had no real answer to the simple challenge she was giving me. As soon as I was forced to drop my Nazi-orientated sloganizing, I was lost. I had no explanation to why we were there and what we were doing or what the whole thing meant at all. And this is what I mean. We had that there in the Crimea, this feeling of uncertainty. And to me, it was slightly destabilizing.
Was it true that you were burning and slaughtering?
Well, when I talked, after I had talked to this Russian teacher, and I think Tanya was her name, but that doesn't matter. I think Tanya, she was a beautiful girl, and I had a, while I was only 19, 20, I would have loved to have a little closer relationship with her, but I was a harmless young man. I didn't know how to start that, and she would not have allowed anything like that, I think. But it is this fear which...
The question I asked was it true, as she'd said, that you were burning and slaughtering in their country?
Yes, of course it was true. And, of course, she knew about it. She was now in this village, and the war already then had been a year old, more than a year old, when she was saying that to me, because I was now going forward a bit in time. And, yes, many Soviet people had died. Their villages, their cities, their towns were destroyed. Many people were killed. She was quite right to say that to me. And then, at that time, my own experience was that it was true. We had killed people. We had burned places. We had been ruthless. We had been attacking. Yes, she was right.
But had you personally been involved in that type of thing?
Well, if you are in a panzer unit and you attack a place, whatever it is, a village or a town, you kill, you destroy. I remember one incident, and that was in the summer, and it's so long back, I don't know exactly where that was and which year, but I remember I was driving an open track vehicle and had a 7.5 gun behind me, and we were shooting into a village, and slowly advancing, and it seemed that the Russians would be moving out of that village. We were going to take it now. And at the one side, there was a house with a high hedge, and above that hedge, one could see apple trees. Was apples on? So it must have been August, September. What do I know? And somebody said, pull up, you'll get some apples. And I did pull up, and I took an ammunition box, and with somebody of the crew, the fighting was going on, but I just jumped out and went round the hedge, and I saw a woman bending over a girl in a kind of a white dress or white apron, and she was blonde, and I saw the blood, and she was kind of ripped open at the side, and I just stared and stood there and wanted to pinch apples, and the woman got up and came to me and said something, you swine, you German murderers, things like that. My Russian was fairly basic, but I, as a young lad, having been by that time for about a year already there, I learned quite a bit. I understood what she said to me, the hatred in her eyes, and she said something, you have killed her, and why, she never had done anything bad, why, what are you doing, and things like that. And the best thing that could be said for myself was I took my ammunition box and buggered off again and went back. And they said about the apples, and I said, no, no, somebody is dead there, a girl. And so we drove off. So this accusation of having killed, yes, of course, I knew it was true.
Can you tell me about the, going back to the narrative, about the after the Russian counterattack, which you've described, the military situation as you personally experienced it in the eastern part of the Crimean Peninsula?
Well, now the Russians had disappeared again, and the large part of the Crimea was occupied by us, except Sevastopol and the Kerch Peninsula to the east. And we were being told there was quite a strong army in this Kerch Peninsula stretching out to the east. For much of our time then, we were kind of regrouping or what. As a little soldier, you don't really know what is going on. But we were moving from one place to another, and quite often we were doing what we called Partisanenjagd. We chased in the hills the partisans. And there were quite partisans everywhere in the Crimea. And we were being told that they were being led by a German communist called Vogt. And I think even that we were urged, if we ever find that Vogt, that we would get something for it. The German command very much wanted to lay hand on Vogt, because when we were in the little towns like Steyr, Krim, I remember, we could well realize that the partisans during the day, they were walking in the town, but at night they were attacking positions of ours. And I sometimes remember, for instance, in this little town of Steyr, Krim, which just comes to my mind, that they lit fires around the town, bonfires, which showed to Russian pilots the position of the town or of certain places which they wanted to bomb. Four fires or three fires, which gave the indication to them. And very often at night, the fire suddenly started, one there, one here, and one over there. And then straight away bombing started. So they must have had some arrangement with their pilots to say, well, we make a fire here and a fire there, and right in the middle where these lines come together, that's where is a German gun position or whatever it was, what they wanted to hit. And they sometimes were successful. And quite often did we go out into the hills on Partisanenjagd, and we found remnants of their camps, of their fires they had. We could see they had been there, but obviously they protected themselves quite well against us. They knew always when we were coming, we were far too slow. But then again, we had help from local population, the Tatars. In the Crimea, there were, I think, several hundred thousand Tatars. There were Tatar villages lived in only by Tatar people. I think Muslims they are. And they were definitely, or most of them. I don't know so much about anti-communist. My political understanding in those days was very low. But there was a strong anti-Russian sentiment in them. They did not like the Russians. They were very different people from them. And I can imagine that they were being promised that if once the Germans win the war, they will have a Tatar state in the Crimea. Somehow, I can't verify it, but I think there was some talk about that. Now, when we went on Partisanenjagd, we had Tatars coming with us. They knew the country, and they found out. And once we had the Tatars with us, we became much more dangerous to the Partisans. And we sometimes captured some and caught them in their camps. And of course, then we were always ruthless. They were shot straight away, very cruelly we treated them. But then we thought that was war. After the war, of course, I understand that all the Tatars, and there's something like 400,000 in my mind, they were all transported to Central Asia by Stalin as a punishment for having helped the Germans.
Can you describe discovering the partisan camps in more detail?
Well, details. I saw several camps. There's no detailed arrangements. They had some tents and were sleeping in the open and had dug some holes. And we could see that they had some posts in the trees from where they were watching. And also we did realize that their camps were always well protected by guards outside by finding places where one could see that soldiers had or partisans had been there. They had weapons, but I cannot recall that we captured really any weapons. But they had weapons because they shot at us, and they had machine guns too. Apart from that, I think nothing more than that, not in the Crimea. But I do remember that several times some transport of ours, when we were in the villages, of course, we had to have bread lorries and food lorries going from one place to another, that these lorries or so had been attacked and everyone killed, driver and whoever was with them. And all the things taken away, of course. They were rather successful in that respect, because we had to have transport between the places and we could not secure all the roads and highways in the Crimea.
Did you see captured partisans being shot?
Yes. They were just stood up against a tree. Very often they were beaten up, badly beaten up. And I am in no way proud of saying this, but I would try to express the reality as it was. That's why I am saying it.
Were any of the partisans interrogated?
Yes, sometimes they were, but there was always that language difficulty, and they didn't have much to say anyway, and we knew they would not really tell us anything. And of course, we used the Tatars as interpreters. And in one case, I remember there was quite an exchange between a Tatar and a partisan. The partisan was obviously telling him he was a traitor and why he was doing it. And he spat at him, and then he was beaten up by one of our guards, I think. But they hated each other, of course, the Russians resented it, the Tatars were now on the German side.
Was the beating with fists or
butts
or
with
what?
Fists and everything, but with fists. You can, if you have somebody who cannot defend himself and you really knock with your fist in his face, you can do some terrible things. And there was sometimes a kind of stupid fury on our side, because we had lost people too, killed by the partisans, and to us, the partisans are how modern ways, in modern ways now, how people are being looked at as terrorists. They were terrorists. They were behind the lines, and we saw no reason to treat them like soldiers. If we captured soldiers at the front line, that was a different thing. They were not beaten up, or not generally beaten up. But these were terrorists and were treated accordingly. That was our way of thinking.
Were they all men, or were there any women?
No, there were women too. I can't recall really details about women, but I know there were women too. I recall one incident, because in the Crimea there was, I think, one Romanian army. I'm not quite sure. I think the Romanians had 2-3 armies there in the southern sector. And there was one Romanian army around Simferopol, and I do remember that must have been near Stari Krim. We were on partisan in Yak, so were the Romanians. And they had caught a woman, and they were assaulting her, they were raping her. And in the end, I saw it. Somebody had a carrot and stuck in her into her vagina and knocked it in with some little piece of board. It was terrible. And there was a fight then between Germans and Romanians because of this. There were a German officer or what, I difficult to remember. But he was furious. This was beyond everything. The raping or so, well, we had come too late for that. But that woman was lying there and was screaming and was bleeding. It was a lovely young woman. She was not in uniform, so she was a terrorist. Okay, we had a right to treat her like that, I suppose. But these things, they happened, and regretfully. But what if I sit here now and say regretfully, what does that mean?
What was the demeanor of the partisans whom you captured?
In sullen. I think they knew once they were captured, that was it. They had no chance to get away in any way. They knew they were now going to be killed. And they went to their death proudly, sadly, of course, everyone does that. But they knew they were going to be killed, and that was it. And they were not giving one inch to us by that they were falling down on their knees or anything. They were proudly going to their death.
Was there any attempt to win over the partisans?
Not what I experienced personally. I can imagine that they tried, perhaps, that they may have succeeded, because we wanted to get into their headquarters. We wanted to get to this German Vogt, and couldn't get to them. And I can imagine that some of them were tortured, so in order that we would get to the root of it. But as far as I know, all the time I was on the Crimea, we never managed to get into their organization.
Now, I think that you said that there was some kind of defensive line dug on the eastern part of the Crimean Peninsula. Can you describe that?
Yes, it was the narrowest part of the peninsula, the Kerch Peninsula, and we called it the Papatschgraben, Papatsch Ditch. It was must have been quite a few kilometers, 30 kilometers or something like that. I don't really know. It was the narrowest part across the peninsula. It was a deep ditch, an anti-tank ditch. Tanks would have fallen into it. And once a tank would have gone into it, it couldn't have gone out, got out again. And I understand that the civilian population had dug these ditches. And later on, in other parts of Russia, I have seen some of these ditches. But once we had broken through that Papatsch ditch, we filled it in, took prisoners and filled it in, and then we went with our panzers through, I remember. Because when we attacked, the Russian army in the Kerch Peninsula, it was a massive air attack, I remember, and then a panzer attack, and we were very successful, and I was amongst the panzers who went across this Papach Garden, one of the first, and we were very ruthless prisoners. We straight away had quite a few prisoners, and they had to shovel the Papach ditch in, and they were rolled back very quickly, that army. I think it took us 1 week, and we reached Kerch. Rolling hills, lovely countryside. I remember I saw many horses. Sometimes tough resistance, but on the whole, that army got beaten very badly. There I do remember one case, High 175, something stick in your mind. There was a battle, Höhe 175. The Russians had signed, kind of fortified it on the approaches to Kerch, and we took many prisoners there. And there were also women amongst there, and I wondered about their fate, because I saw them trooping past us, and in one case I saw that one German soldier got a young woman out of there and wanted to take her behind the bushes, what do I know. And he was stopped doing that. The woman was being sent back. But my experiences later in the war, thinking of them, I think fearfully about the experiences these women must have gone through later on. I have no other evidence for that. I also remember one thing. One of us, he went amongst the prisoners and knocked them about, hit them, and I think he had a board and hit them. And a German officer came and took him away, and that one man was punished. He went to Klink, Kalabush, or whatever you call it. So there were some officers who had a sense of honor, this gentlemanly sense. You fight your enemy, but a thing like that, not enough. Because I remember very well how furious he was, and the officer, and how he told him off, and he was taken away straight away.
I think that you said that you saw the retreating Russian troops fleeing across the strait.
Yes.
Can you describe that?
Well, all the way, really, they were running. I think the whole thing took about a week. The resistance came when they couldn't run anymore, when they came to the end, when they came to Kerch. And in Kerch, they were supported in their fighting by workers' battalions, workers from the factories. Kerch was an industrial town, was a port, shipbuilding was there, you could see it. And my later experiences too about Russia, wherever you got into industrial areas and where they somehow organized resistance, in addition to army assistance by workers' battalions, the workers from the factories, I can imagine, they were organized into kind of militias. Anyway, they were fighting us. I had quite a few experiences about that later on in the Donets area, the industrial area. But here in Kerch, I noticed it. They fought very hard because they were fighting in their own town. The army, yes, of course, it was a Red Army, and on the whole, I have learned to have respect for that army. But most of the soldiers came from somewhere else. But they were fighting in their own town. Not only did they know their own town very well and the whole defensive positions, but they were really fighting for something. Their women and children were in that town, and their resistance was very tough. But they were overwhelmed. They could not do anything against us. We were a strong army, and then we were going. And all the time, I remember, it was beautiful weather. We were on top again, and I felt much better than I had felt in the winter before in Feodosia when we were beaten. We could see the sea then. Kerch is surrounded by sea. To the south is the Black Sea, and to the north the Sea of Azov. And You can look to the other side, the Taman Insula, Peninsula, as we called it. The Cuban River runs out of there. And they were now getting across in boats and anything you can think of, sailing boats and little paddle steamers, whatever it was, and even kind of floats with drums and boards across. And we all the time were shooting at them, because now we had reached the coastline, and it was a kind of a sport. We were winning now. We were in no danger anymore. They could not, they didn't even shoot back. They all, what they wanted was to row away or get away, and it was a sport, and the feeling for us to have won the Battle of Kerch and see the defeated enemy going away, and we had seen the prisoners before that. It was a great feeling. And saying that, I think it's worth to have a few words on that, this kind of great feeling. I am ashamed of it all now, but one must understand it, that for young lads, and I was then not 19 years old, was I? Or only about 19 years old, to win a battle, to take a town, to have put the effort of it. You have risked your life, after all. There are many dead, some of your own comrades. But to take a town, to have a military victory, to be the victor, to arrive in the town or arrive at the end of the town, which we were now at the coastline, you feel very happy, very elated, something very medieval, I think, comes back into your feeling. To be a victor. And that feeling I had then was great. And I had no sorrow feeling for the Russians. I gave no thought of the sad plight they were in, especially thinking of those workers. And I had seen many workers lying dead in the streets, and saw women over them, their wives, and I saw the children running around. That was a sad spectacle. But they were second-rate people, as far as I was concerned, and it was just too bad that some civilians and children or so die. But we were the victor for Führer, Volk, and Fatherland, and it was great.
What happened next after this victory on the Kerch Peninsula, as far as you personally was concerned?
Infantry units, I remember, they then completed some mopping up operations, and I remember we went into the town and we looked at the damage, and there had been some looting going on, but that was forbidden. But nevertheless, it went on. But then looting in Russia, they had very little to loot. But some of us say they pinched this or that. We then went back to some sort of an assembly point, was it in the town, where we were collected, our units. And we stayed there for several days, I think, and then drove back by road to the other end of the Papatschgraben again, to Feodosia, because there was a railway. And from that railway, then we were later transported away. That's why we went to Feodosia, I think.
You mentioned looting. What type of things would the soldiers be interested in looting?
Well, there was more or less absolutely nothing in the shops to loot at all. It was going into the houses of the people, and one looked through things there. Of course, something to eat very often, because the food situation in the Crimea was very bad for us. We were being told that because there was only one narrow gauge, no, not a narrow, a rail, one only one railway leading across the Perekop.
Isthmus.
The Isthmus of Perekop. And the railway had to be used for bringing in troops and ammunition and weapons, that food was not a top priority and the rations we had were very small. We were often hungry, and whenever we had a chance to find some place where we could get some food of any kind,